Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Janata ki, Anantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Nitai Gopremana. So does anyone remember what we discussed last week? Straight into the chapter then. So we're on to chapter 6, verse number 26. Tonight we'll finish the chapter and we'll hear the pastime of Sabari Muni, which is a famous pastime within the Bhagavatam. Verse number 26. Although you, Vanashwa, went into the forest. It's not funny, I'm not amused. So, if you've got a smile on your face, you're the only one, because I'm not amused with you coming that late. So, you keep smiling, but I'm upset. So, great. Although you, Vanashwa, went into the forest with his 100 wives, all of them were very morose. The sages in the forest, however, being very kind to the king, began very carefully and attentively performing an Indrajagya so that the king might have a son. So, would have a Bandhapur?
One may enter the Vanaprastha order of the life with his wife. But the Vanaprastha order means complete retirement from the household life. Although King Yuvanashva retired from family life, he and his wife were always morose because he had no son.
So what are the points here? So, Chanakya Pandit says that there is no pleasure in this world like detachment, and there is no suffering like attachment. So in this material world, ultimately, the Varnashram system is leading us towards
detachment.
It is called Vairagya, or Virakti. So we're meant to become detached in this material world. We're not meant to be attached to the material world. And the purpose of following the Varnashram system is to gradually breed detachment. Now, in this day and age, it's very difficult to follow the Varnashram system properly. Therefore, the way to become detached, even when you're in the system, the way to be, by develop Krishna consciousness, you will be detached from this material world. If you do not develop consciousness, you cannot become properly detached from this material world. So, we see in this pastime, which is about to take place, that the ultimate lesson is that we need to become detached from this material world in order to enter into the spiritual world. You can't remain, as Prabhupada says, sense gratification and spiritual life or Krishna consciousness, they go ill together. You can't have both. You can have both, but you can't go back to the spiritual world by having both. Therefore, the Varnashram system gradually moderates us. That is the purpose of Grihastha Ashram. Grihastha Ashram means that you will, as a Grihastha, you will have a certain amount of licensed sense gratification. You can enjoy your senses to a degree, which is permittable or permissible. But after that, you cannot have more sense gratification. So, by following that system, but ultimately by practicing Krishna consciousness, we develop detachment. We voluntarily accept a certain amount of detachment or austerity. That's the Varnashram system. But that will not, in and of itself, lead you to become completely detached from this material world. The only way to become completely detached is by becoming Krishna conscious. And we'll see in this chapter that is the message which is being explained. So, any points?
But if you are in Krishna consciousness, then you don't have to make a special endeavor to get detached. It comes for itself.
Any other points?
Even in the previous section we saw in chapter 1, there is an essay topic on that. King Sudyumna also retires to the forest, finally retiring to the forest at the end of the day. There Prabhupada writes that he went to complete his spiritual life. So that means the spiritual life has to start earlier, not at a Vanaprastha, he starts thinking of developing spiritual life or some transcendental aspect of Krishna consciousness. It has to start much earlier so that he can just finish it off in Vanaprastha.
Anything else? No, not completely detached, because even a sannyasi is not completely detached. Well, it has to be natural. Vanapras means that the wife and husband stay together, but they become more attached to spiritual life or Krishna consciousness. So it means when the children have grown up and they get married, and then more or less your household life is finished. Grihastha responsibilities are less, because when the children move, then there's less responsibility. You're not as entangled as you were before. So then naturally, if you feel inspired, then you become more serious in Krishna consciousness together. So it will just happen naturally. There's no time that you can say, okay, that's the time you have to do it. Of course, we should be aiming, when you get to the age of 50, you should feel within yourself a strong urge to become more serious in Krishna consciousness. That's the Varnashram system. But, like I have some friends who are very close friends, devotees. I'm 45, and they're older than me, and some of them just have kids. Kids are 1 year old, 2 years old, 5 years old. So, I mean, they're not going to be out of Grihastha life till they're 65. That's old. So, the point is that when it comes, when the opportunity comes, then you have to be. So it should be at the age of 50, you should be becoming more serious, and you should become more detached. But if practically you can't leave at that time, then leave as soon as you can. Or become as serious as soon as you can. Or just be serious right now, and then there's no real problem. The point is, when you get the opportunity, when your material responsibilities become less, then take advantage of it and become a Krishna conscious. That's it. Did that answer your question? Okay. Any other points? Okay. 27. Being thirsty one night, the king entered the arena of sacrifice. So when he saw all the brahmanas lying down, he personally drank the sanctified water meant to be drunk by his wife. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu.
Yagnas performed by brahmanas according to Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are so potent that the sanctifying of water by Vedic mantras can bring about the desired result. In this instance, the brahmanas sanctified the water so that the king's wife might drink it in the yagna. But by providence, the king himself went there at night and being thirsty, drank the water.
So any points here?
providence is very much stronger than one's endeavor.
So what do you mean by providence?
Karma.
Could be karma. There could be someone else involved. Would you like to explain it further?
So it's a combination of karma and indulgence with the deity nature, which is the divine nature of the Lord. So combined with those two, one is forced into the womb of a mother. So there can be multiple things, or there can be will of the Lord as well, but usually for materialist people, it's usually karma and deity nature.
Okay, yeah, okay, if you explain like that. But because we're all devotees, then how do we?
Depends on what level devotees
are. Yes. Yeah, Krishna is definitely involved. It's, I mean, for us, we take it that Krishna is heavily involved in our lives. So we take it when something happens, then, yeah, you're right, it's our karma. That Krishna is specifically or controlling that situation. So a devotee feels that it is Krishna. Providence means Krishna. So Krishna makes arrangements to purify us. And those arrangements are much more powerful than us. Even though you may have your desires and you may have your free will and you have your desire where you want to go in life, but Krishna, he changes everything when he wants. And that is his prerogative. So here we see, and sometimes it happens like that. You see in this pastime, he walks into the arena, then he suddenly becomes thirsty and he drinks something, and then his whole life, you know, he ends up having a baby. You know, just because he drank some water. So this is not an ordinary thing. So sometimes in our lives, things happen. And suddenly the whole thing just goes, gets carried off in a different direction. So we take at that time, that's Krishna directing that. Because Krishna wants to purify us in a particular way. So Krishna is ultimately in control because Krishna is trying to orchestrate us coming back to him. So we see here that the Brahmanas had great tejas. Now, as mentioned, Brahmana tejas means they have great potency. So they can infuse the water with such potency that when you drink that water, the woman can get pregnant or these things. So in Kali Yuga, you won't find this kind of potency. But the blessings of advanced devotees are very powerful. So powerful that practically if they bless you, then those things can take place. So if a devotee is very powerful, like a sannyasi or a guru or a very advanced devotee, then when they speak, then those things can take place. But in the previous ages, it was different. They could change the water and you could drink the water and these things would take place like that. Any other points?
So the yajna was not important to be performed. If the water could have been made potent just by mantras. That's what has happened. You can make the water, I mean, if you're a brahmana, they can just say the mantra and the water will become sanctified. Yeah. So yajna was not needed.
Yeah, possibly.
Because they thought that they would do the yajna and then his wife will drink it. But the yajna was not performed, he drank before.
When the Brahmanas got up from bed and saw the water pot empty, they inquired who had done this work of drinking the water meant for begetting a child. When the Brahmanas came to understand that the king, inspired by the supreme controller, had drunk the water, they all exclaimed, "Alas, the power of providence is real power. No one can counteract the power of the supreme." In this way, they offered their respectful obeisances unto the Lord. Thereafter, in due course of time, a son with all the good symptoms of a powerful king came forth from the lower right side of King Yuvanashwa's abdomen. The baby cried so much for breast milk that all the Brahmanas were very happy. Who will take care of this baby? The baby cried so much for breast milk that all the Brahmanas were very unhappy. Who will take care of this baby, they said. Then Indra, who was worshipped by that Jagya, came and solaced the baby. Do not cry. Indra said, then Indra put his index finger in the baby's mouth and said, you may drink me. Because Yuvanashwa, the father of the baby, was blessed by the Brahmanas, he did not fall a victim to death. After this incident, he performed severe austerities and achieved perfection in that very spot. Mandata, the son of Yuvanashwa, was the cause of fear for Ravana and other thieves and rogues who caused anxiety. O King Parikshit, because they feared him, the son of Yuvanashwa was known as Trisad Dasyu. This name was given by King Indra. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the son of Yuvanashwa was so powerful that when he became emperor, he ruled the entire world, consisting of 7 islands, without any second ruler. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not different from the auspicious aspects of great sacrifices, such as the ingredients of the sacrifice, the chanting of Vedic hymns, the regulative principles, the performer, the priests, the result of the sacrifice, the arena of sacrifice, and the time of sacrifice. Knowing the principles of self-realization, Mandata worship that transcendentally situated Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, who comprises all the demigods. He also gave immense charity to the Brahmanas, and thus he performed Jagya to worship the Lord. All places from where the sun rises on the horizon, shining brilliantly, to where the sun sets, are known as the possession of the celebrated Mandata, the son of Yuvanashwa. Mandata begot 3 sons in the womb of Bindumati, the daughter of Shasha Bindu. The sons were Purukutsa, Ambarisha, and Muchukunda, a great mystic yogi. These 3 brothers had 50 sisters who all accepted the great sage Sobari as their husband. Sobari Rishi was engaged in austerity deep in the water of the river Jamuna when he saw a pair of fish engaged in sexual affairs. Thus he perceived the pleasure of sex life, and induced by his desire, he went to King Mandata and begged for one of the king's daughters. In response to this request, the king said, O Brahmana, any of my daughters may accept any husband according to her personal selection. Mitesh, would you like to read that?
This is the beginning of the story of Sobari Rishi. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Mandata was the king of Mathura, and Sobari Rishi was engaged in austerity while submerged in the river Yamuna. The Rishi felt sexual desire. He emerged from the water and went to King Mandata to ask that one of the king's daughters become his wife.
One of the points here.
You heard this many times, unless we are devotees, we are hard to control sex desire. Sex desire has destroyed many great rishis and yogis in the past who are meditating on the end of their own strength. They are not surrendered to Krishna, not performing austerities for Krishna's pleasure. So such austerities can be possible.
But all the devotees are struggling with sex desire as well. So how can your explanation be true?
Devotees are struggling with sex desire, but they are on the right path. The rishis and munis are also struggling with sex desire, but they are not on the right path. So one day the devotees will come there to the goal of
We'll get to the upper road section later. We're not up to the upper road yet. Mm-hmm. Any other points? So, the Bhagavatam is almost at the, or our study of the Bhagavatam is almost at the 10th canto. So, why is this being mentioned again? Because it's been mentioned repeatedly through the Bhagavatam so far, that if you want to enter the 10th canto, if you want to enter Krishna's pastimes, if you want to enter reality, then one has to give up sex desire. And sex desire is the one of the greatest obstacles in the material world, which keeps the living entities bound within this material world. Sex desire is potent up until Swagaloka, but above Swagaloka, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satchaloka, the higher realms, sex desire is overcome. But most people don't live in those higher realms. Most people live in the Swagaloka down. Most of the universe is populated from that place down. It's only very powerful personalities who live above Swagaloka. Great sages, rishis, and personalities. But most of this material world is simply infatuated and controlled by sex desire. And Prabhupada says in the very first verse of the Bhagavatam, he said, this is the active principle of the material world. It's what stimulates the material world. It's what keeps the material world going. It's what the entire material world is what is operating the entire material world. So, in order to overcome that sex desire, one has to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. So that is what the Bhagavatam is teaching. So now that we're at the 9th canto, if we're going to enter the 10th canto next year, then we have to be reasonably free from sex desire. Otherwise you won't understand the 10th canto properly. So one has to become purified in consciousness. If you're purified, then the 10th canto will become relishable and assimilated to some degree. But the 10th canto, otherwise, it will become very challenging, very difficult. Especially the intimate parts of the 10th canto. And a lot of the 10th canto is quite intimate. So, in order to understand God properly, one has to give up these lesser desires. So that is the means and the process. Interesting, though, because the Bhagavatam says itself, at the end of the Rasa Panchajaya, or the five chapters describing the Rasa Lila in the 10th canto, at the end of the 33rd chapter, the final verse says, by hearing these pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, one's heart will become free from lust or material desire. And Prabhupada actually, there's a letter to Hayagriva, I think it was in 1970, or it might have even been earlier in our movement, and he writes to Prabhupada, he says, Prabhupada, I'm struggling with sex desire, like all devotees in this material world. And Prabhupada wrote back, and Prabhupada said, then you must hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. And by hearing about that, that will free you from your desire to enjoy in this material world. So that is the necessity. But you have to become qualified first to hear. If you try to hear it prematurely, it will disturb your consciousness. If you hear it with sufficient purification, it will elevate your consciousness. So that's what we're being prepared for. Any points?
Guru, can you tell me what is Ladini Shakti?
Ladini Shakti means the bliss potency of God.
Bliss potency.
Bliss. Yeah.
That's only Radharani.
Radharani is like the source of Ladini Shakti. She is composed of Ladini Shakti. She is bliss personified.
And gopis also are Ladini Shakti?
Yeah.
You have any idea how many gopis are there?
Rupa Goswami says in Radha Krishna Ganodesh Dipika, he says there are 800,000 eternally liberated gopis. And then, and when it describes the Rasa Lila, which will be described in the 10th canto, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says when Krishna did the Rasa Lila, there were 3 billion gopis with him. So, there's a lot. gopis. There's no actual amount of how many servants Krishna has. You know, it says 3 billion, but that doesn't mean there's only 3 billion. It could be more like that, but at least it says 3 billion gives you an idea. So, any other points?
See, Prabhupada, you told us that the Lord has promised that He will always protect the devotion of the devotee. So, I mean, it means He was not surrendered. Otherwise, the Lord would have protected him.
Yeah, because he committed the aparad.
The aparad, Lord punished the aparad if people surrender.
Not when it's Vaishnava aparad, that's the point. Mm-hmm. Not when it's Vaishnava aparad. We already heard that in the last pastime with Ambarish.
I thought he punished everything.
No, because Ambarish went to Vishnu. And Vishnu said, what are you doing here? He said, I can't do anything about it. You have to go back to... Sorry, Devasa went to Vishnu, and Vishnu said, I can't do anything, you have to go back to Ambarish. So Sabara has committed Vaishnava aparad, so the Lord can't do anything about it.
So Vishnu would have surrendered to the Lord that time, when that sixth desire came in his mind, and then Lord would have advised him. No?
I don't know. I'm just saying what is said in the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, if you read the Bhagavatam, where it describes that particular pastime, it describes that Brahma was... It was almost like he was consciously teaching us an effort. Consciously teaching us a lesson. In other words, how careful we have to be. So whether or not he was actually bewildered, it's not like. But he was teaching us, we have to be so careful. Because he became attracted to the daughter. So how careful we have to be. Even with the wife, the mother, or the sister, or the daughter, like that. So. Anything else?
It is also mentioned, like, you know, that in Swargaloka, when the residents are enjoying sexual life, they are not acquiring, it's not entangling for them, because it is their karma that they are enjoying that. I think that's what
you mentioned. That's in Swarga. So above Swarga, then they're free from sex desire. They don't enjoy sex life. In Swarga, then, yeah, there's no karma. Anything else?
Then who are the Manjaris, Prabhu? Who are the Manjaris?
Manjaris? Krishna is 16. Radharani is like 15. You know, around about that kind of age. Manjaris are about 12 years old. So Manjari means like on the Tulsi plant, you have the Manjari. Manjari means like the fresh, like young bud. So Manjari means like the fresh. So the young girls, they're about 12 years old. So they act like they are maid servants of Radha. Because Radha is... So they're very intimate maid servants of Srimati Radharani.
The gopis means Manjaris included, or?
Yeah, broadly, when we say gopis, it means all of them. Yeah, like that. But if we become specific, then we say Manjaris, and then we say gopis means the older girls, Manjaris means the younger girls. So.
As for the sakis, you know, the Manjaris plus the sakis.
Saki means friend, so. They're just words, that's all. Manjari means one thing, gopi means another, and saki means another thing. So you have to see the context in which it's being said.
I was reading the book and said, this Manjari helps this
saki. Yeah, so then we take it that the saki is older and the Manjari is younger, that's all. Okay. So Bari Muni thought, I am now feeble because of old age. My hair has become grey, my skin is slack, and my head always trembles. Besides, I am a yogi. Therefore, women do not like me. Since the king thus rejected me, I shall reform my body in such a way as to be desirable even to celestial women. What to speak of the daughters of worldly kings? Thereafter, when Sabari Muni became quite a young and beautiful person, the messenger of the palace took him inside the residential quarters of the princesses, which were extremely opulent. All 50 princesses then accepted him as their husband, although he was only one man. Thereafter, the princesses, being attracted by Sabari Muni, gave up their sisterly relationship and quarreled among themselves, each one of them contending, "This man is just suitable for me and not for you." In this way, there ensued a great disagreement. So what does all this mean? Most problems, not all, but yeah. There's other problems as well. But yeah, it does cause a lot, though. It does cause a lot. Anything else? Yeah, if you're attached, you will suffer. Anything else? So, have you seen on television, they have that show called Days of Our Lives? No one knows? You don't know? It's famous in the West. It's on at 12 o'clock every day for the last 500 years. On television. You know what it is, right? Yeah. So you must have the equivalent in India. You must have something in the middle of the day which only housewives watch who are sitting at home doing nothing. And they watch these stupid shows, and it's all about, you know, this one married that one, and then that one broke up, and this one had an affair. Do you have that in India? Or? Lots of shows. Yeah. Yeah. Well, in the West, we have this show. It's been going for a long time, since the 70s. I remember, because I remember when I was a kid, it was started. So it's like 40 years plus. Yeah. The same show. It's been going for 40 years, and it's the most mundane show on the television. It's all about, you know, this one had this and this one had that and this one had that. And it's like, it doesn't mean anything. So this is what the material world's about. It's like Days of Our Lives. It's just mundane, repetitious, untasteful, you know, dissatisfying, like that. So that is the material world. So same thing here in the Bhagavatam itself. You know, one guy turns up, and then all the girls, they all start fighting, right? And they're all sisters, and they all start fighting. This is the material world. It's material consciousness. So as devotees, we're meant to separate ourselves from that as far as possible. And we have to watch ourselves very carefully, actually. Because sometimes we act like the non-devotional side comes out of us. And we act very mundane, the way we deal with the other devotees, in so many different ways. So we have to be very conscientious of how we act and behave towards the other devotees. So you see here in the Bhagavatam, it's just showing us we have to be very conscientious, very careful. Any points? Okay. Because Sabari Muni was expert in chanting mantras perfectly, his severe austerities resulted in an opulent home with garments, ornaments, properly dressed and decorated maidservants and manservants, and varieties of parks with clear water lakes and gardens. In the gardens, fragrant with flowers, fragrant with varieties of flowers, birds chirped and bees hummed, surrounded by professional singers. So Bari Muni's home was amply provided with valuable beds, seats, ornaments, and arrangements for bathing. And there were varieties of sandalwood creams, flower garlands, and palatable dishes. Thus, surrounded by opulent paraphernalia, the Muni engaged in family affairs with his numerous wives. So, Jamuna Leela, I'd like to read that.
So now Rishi was a great yogi. Yogic perfection makes available great material appearances. Anima, Ratina, Mahima, Prakti, Trakanya, Ishitva, Vashitva, Kama Vashayata. Tobara Muni exhibited super excellence in material enjoyment by dint of his yogic perfection. The word Bahava Racha means expert in chanting mantras. As material opulence can be achieved by ordinary material means, it can also be achieved by subtle means through mantras. By chanting mantras, Sobhara Muni arranged for material opulence, but this was not perfection in life. As will be seen, Sobhara Muni became very dissatisfied with material opulence and thus left everything and re-entered the forest in the Vanaprastha order and achieved final success. Those who are not Atma Tattvavid, who do not know the spiritual value of life, can be satisfied with external material opulences. But those who are Atma Tattvavid are not inspired by material opulence. This is the instruction we can derive from the life and activities of Sobhara Muni.
Okay, any points?
In today's day and age, we have to work so hard if they have to attain the level of opulence with Sobhara Muni. They have to work very hard and toil away to get this sort of opulence, but in the previous stages, just by moving to the future, by chanting of mantras, the same opulence is available. So, Kamai Maharaj was telling us, saying in the Bhagavatam class, that whether we have advanced or whether all this technology has actually taken us back. Sydney, somewhere in Sydney to from one suburb, which was around 25 kilometers away from the city. In the previous ages, there were horse paths, and it used to take around 1 hour to cross that distance. And even today, it takes 1 hour with the car and the cars in the traffic. So, then what's going on?
Anything else?
Oh, I have a doubt. I mean, we don't see any record.
Yeah, well, it's not mentioned here, but he may have. He may have. And like, sometimes you might offend a devotee, then you'll never see that devotee again. But in your heart, if you're fully repentant about what you did, then Krishna will forgive you. So, we have to be very careful what we desire. Says, Chintamani Krishna, Chaitanya Rasa Raha. So the holy name is Chintamani. Chintamani means it is like a touchstone. Like a touchstone. Chintamani actually means conscious. Svashamani is touchstone. It's a little bit different. But the Chintamani means it can fulfill all of your desires. So devotional service is very powerful. So if you have material desires in your heart, in your consciousness, while you are chanting the Maha Mantra and doing devotional service, those desires can easily be fulfilled. That's the potency of bhakti. So it means that dharma, artha, karma, moksha, all of those purusharthas, or the goals of human life, they are said to become servants of at the house of bhakti. So when you do devotional service, you have to be very careful what you desire. If you desire to become rich, you can easily become rich. I remember when I joined the temple, there was one devotee, and he was very strict. He was a grihastha, but he was very strict. He used to get up every day 3 o'clock, chant his rounds, have all his rounds finished by 6 o'clock, and then he'd read Bhagavatam between 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Very strict person, like that. But in his heart, he had desire to become wealthy. And then in a short amount of time, he started the business, and the business took off. And then when he became more wealthy, then he stopped being so strict, stopped getting up, chanting all his rounds, and now he's off in Maya. I saw it myself. I didn't realize because I was just a new devotee. I didn't look back. Because he was so strict in the sadhana, but because the strong material desire was there, he became very wealthy, and then he just left. And now he's not around anymore. So, the nature of devotional service is very potent. So you have to be very careful what you desire. So when you go before Krishna, don't have material desires in your heart. Because material desires can easily be fulfilled. Easily. But it's much more difficult to get Krishna himself. So when we approach Krishna, that should be the desire. Krishna, let me serve you. Whatever you want, just give me service. And when you pray like that, then that is actually pleasing to Krishna. And then you will attain Krishna. But if your desire is something material, that's easy for Krishna to get. Just like in Christianity, they have a prayer and they say every day, give us this day our daily bread. And Prabhupada used to say, why are you asking for bread? Why do you go to Krishna and say, give me bread? Krishna, he'll automatically give you bread. So you don't pray for those kind of things to Krishna. Any points?
In the 13th mantra of nature of devotion, and it was said that, Lord, you know what I have done, so please forgive me. And Srila Prabhupada wrote in, I'm surrendering unto you, that's what the prayer was. Srila Prabhupada wrote that if you think you have done, then you should just do Shravanam Kirtan Vishnu Smaran. And that will protect the Lord will trust you.
Any other points? Then Prabhupada taught us you can pray to Krishna, Krishna, if you desire, give me good health. But there's no guarantee that Krishna will give that to you. That's the point. So when you pray for anything, like when Prabhupada was leaving this world, devotees wanted to pray to, they said to Prabhupada, can we pray to the deities that you will stay? Prabhupada said, you pray to the deities, my dear Krishna, if you desire, let Prabhupada stay. So when you pray for health, you have to say, Krishna, if you desire, because maybe he doesn't want you to have good health. Maybe it's better for your Krishna consciousness not to have good health. So there's no use praying to Krishna, give me good health, because they won't. And then the other thing is, most devotees don't look after themselves properly anyway. So what's the use of praying if you don't do anything? I see all the devotees, they come to me every week and they say, I've got this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem. You just look at me and say, well, of course you've got the problem. You don't look after yourself. Devotees don't eat properly. Now, they don't eat the right foods. They don't do practically any exercise. You know, some devotees got sore knees, all these things. Of course you got sore knees. You don't walk. Old age is different. That's a different ball game. So, you know, when you get old, then it's a whole different thing. But arthritis, according to Ayurveda, it's undigested food in the joints. So the joints start crinking up. That's because we're not digesting our food properly, right? And then it gets lodged in the joints, and then we get like hardened like that. So
there's a gout.
What's that?
There's a gout, not osteoarthritis.
Yeah, to a degree. Oh yeah, I mean there's breakdown of the joints as well. There's another type of arthritis as well, that's true. But you see, most people that got arthritis is just because they're not eating properly. They don't digest. So there's no use praying to Krishna, "Krishna, give me good health," if you don't do anything about it. You don't eat properly and you don't do any exercise, and then what's the use of praying to Krishna? "Krishna, give me good health. I don't want to do anything about it, but give me good health." It's like, it doesn't make any sense. Should what? Trifala. Yeah, it is. But then devotees don't eat properly, and then you have trifala, and you think it's going to fix everything. it doesn't work. Like that. Yeah, trifala is very good, but then there's a lot more to it than just trifala. Devotees simplify things. I think I'll just take char and prasha. I'm going to be healthy. It doesn't work like that. Yeah, it's a whole science. Ayurveda is a science. Because Ayurveda says health is based on Agni. Agni means the fire in the stomach. That's what Maharaj is saying, right? So the point is, the fire has to be strong, right? Now, how does the fire become weak? Right? You eat too much, or you eat too much rich food, and the fire gets weak. You can't digest it, and then you haven't even finished digesting lunch because you ate too much or you ate too much rich food, and then you're starting to have dinner already. And the fire gets weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. So devotees have to learn to eat properly for a start. Most devotees don't even eat properly, so how can you expect to be healthy? So you can pray for good health, but then do something about it.
I should have Prabhupada was eating all right, but he still, he was given some medicine, and I think it has got mercury in it, and he said, somebody
has poisoned that medicine was from some kavidas. And I think it has got mercury. So it was from practice of the... Yeah, Prabhupada was old, that was the point. He was 70 when he started. And he pushed himself relentlessly. That's why, And he actually said, I would have lived another 10 years, but I travelled too much. Yeah, he would have lived to 90, but he was just pushing the body so hard. So. Okay. Yeah, but you can reduce it by sinful activity or over-endeavour, all those things. You can reduce it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. Mandata, the king of the entire world, consisting of seven islands, was struck with wonder when he saw the household opulence of Sabari Muni. Thus he gave up his false prestige and position in his position as emperor of the world. So in this material world, someone always has more than you. So there's no use being proud of anything because someone else has more. So we're proud of, we're driving this particular car. But then some other guy has 100 cars. And Lord Brahma rides on a swan. And you're proud because you go to the airport and get on a plane. Whenever someone gets on a plane, they feel very proud. I'm on a plane. That's why when you go to the airports, everyone's in illusion. Everyone wears their best clothes to the airport, because when you go on the plane, you think, oh, I'm really good, I'm going on the plane. But, you know, relatively speaking, it's nothing special. Lord Brahma flies on a swan, you know, in between planets. So everyone becomes proud, but there's always someone better than us, so we should not become proud, actually speaking.
Maybe it's because Dr. Snow that angry that he gave the sick desire to serve.
Salvari.
So that the king
will be blame everything on Krishna.
But could it be?
I don't know anymore. In this way, Salvari Muni enjoyed sense gratification in the material world, but he was not at all satisfied. Just as a fire never ceases blazing if constantly supplied with drops of fat. So Prabhupada explains to us in the purport that if you want to be peaceful in this material world, you have to follow the four regulative principles. It's not possible to be peaceful without following that. And human society, the modern society, they think the way to be peaceful and happy is to break the regulative principles. They think if you eat meat, have illicit sex, take intoxication and gamble, you'll be peaceful, you'll be happy. But Prabhupada points out in the purport, it's actually the opposite. If you want to, it's not no possibility of being peaceful, even as a devotee, unless you're strict. And how do you become strict? You become strict when you have param jishtva nibhattate, when you have a high taste. When you're tasting Krishna consciousness, then you can be strict. Otherwise, it's difficult to follow the regulative principles in Kali Yuga, particularly illicit sex. In marriage, you know, devotees struggle with that. And many grihasthas struggle with sex. The only way to overcome it is you have to have a higher taste. You have to have attachment to Krishna. Otherwise, it's not possible to give these things up. So we see that it is described here that if you do not follow strictly, you will struggle in devotional service. So one time one devotee said to Prabhupada, I have strong sex desire. And then Prabhupada said, grit your teeth and bear it. And Prabhupada went, grit your teeth. You know when you have to tolerate something? You know when you're in pain, you go, like that. So Prabhupada, the devotee said to Prabhupada, what do I do about sex desire? Prabhupada said, grit your teeth and bear it. You have to do some tapasya, some austerity. And ultimately, how do we overcome these things? We get a higher taste. And when you have a higher taste, then all those things become insignificant. It becomes easy. We all know that. When we have taste, it becomes easy. When we don't have taste, it struggles. That's anishta. Anishta means unsteady. When you become steady, then you don't struggle with these things. Thereafter, one day while Salvari Muni, who was expert in chanting mantras, was sitting in a secluded place, he thought to himself about the cause of his fall down, which was simply that he had associated himself with the sexual affairs of the fish. So it mentions here that the reason that he committed the offense was that he offended Garuda. So Garuda, this pastime is taking place in Jamuna. And Mandata, the king, he was the king of Mathura. So this is in the holy Dharma itself. This is before Krishna appeared. So he's living in Mathura. So Bari's in the Jamuna. And Garuda used to come. And Garuda used to fly down and eat the fish within the Jamuna. He used to take the fish. So Salvari was living there, so he was attached to the fish because they would swim past him every day while he's meditating underwater. And you know, you become attached to the animals. So then Garuda used to come and eat the fish. So then he cursed Garuda. And he said, if you eat any fish in this part of the river, you will die. So it was an offense to Garuda because Garuda is a Amala Vaishnava. But he eats fish because he's in a like a bird-like body. But that's his natural food. He eats fish and snakes. So for him, there is no aparad. But because Subari cursed him, you know, cursed Garuda, then he committed an aparad, and that blocked his spiritual advancement. And then when he saw the two fish copulating, having sex life, then his mind became agitated, and then he fell down. So the point is that if we commit aparad, or if we offend devotees, Krishna, he blocks our taste, he stops giving us taste, and then we lose our attraction to Krishna. So offense can be the cause of fall down. If you're spiritually weak, if lust is affecting you, it may be because you're committing offenses to devotees. Not always, but it can be the cause. So it is mentioned here that we have to be very careful. So Bhagavatam is telling us in this section, because we're almost at the 10th canto, once again is telling us two things, very specifically. Be very careful of sex desire, and be very careful of Vaishnava aparad. That's why the Bhagavatam keeps repeating it, because it's so important. If you want to enter Krishna's pastimes, you have to overcome these defects. Any other points?
Strange, the same fish he was trying to protect because of his fall down into the ocean.
What is it?
The same fish whom he was trying to protect became the cause of his fall down.
Yeah.
So why did Parikshit Maharaj give Shrita to
That's a long discussion though. Like that. So we'll have to
what can you do if the fish wants some shelter?
What do you do if the fish wants some shelter?
Yeah.
You have to be intelligent, that's the point. You have to see who you're dealing with. You're dealing with Garuda. So you have to be very careful. He was proud. He thought I can curse Garuda, but Garuda's more powerful. So you have to be careful. Okay. Well, maybe next time it happens you can go and alas. While practicing austerity, even within the depths of the water, and while observing all the rules and regulations practiced by saintly persons, I lost the results of my long austerity simply by association with the sexual affairs of fish. Everyone should observe this fall down and learn from it. A person desiring liberation from material bondage must give up the association of persons interested in sex life, and should not employ his senses externally in seeing, hearing, talking, walking and so on. One should always stay in a secluded place, completely fixing his mind at the lotus feet of the unlimited personality of Godhead. And if one wants any association at all, he should associate with persons similarly engaged. So we have to be very careful of associating with non-devotees. As Prabhupada explains in the purport, non-devotees are attached to sense gratification. And by associating with them too intimately, our desire for sense gratification will also become strong. So devotees have to be very careful about associating with their non-devotees. You can't avoid associating with their non-devotees, but just be careful of it. Because if you associate intimately with them, they can affect your consciousness. Even a very advanced devotees can become affected. Right. So just be very careful about associating with non-devotees. In the beginning, I was alone and engaged in performing the austerities of mystic yoga, but later, because of the association of fish engaged in sex, I desired to marry. Then I became the husband of 50 wives, and in each of them I begot 100 sons, and thus my family increased to 5,000 members. By the influence of the modes of material nature, I became fallen and thought that I would be happy in material life. Thus there is no end to my material desires for enjoyment in this life and the next. In this way, he passed his life in household affairs for some time, but then he became detached from material enjoyment. To renounce material association, he accepted the Vanaprastha order and went to the forest. His devoted wives followed him, for they had no shelter other than their husband. When Sobhari Muni, who was quite conversant with the self, went to the forest, he performed severe penances. In this way, in the fire, at the time of death, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What's that?
Like in all this retrospection, he doesn't say that he's even repentant about, or he's not even reflecting on that consciousness that he committed an appropriate.
Yeah, well, as we said, that he does mention it, so he's aware of it. So, you know, but one thing we have to understand, the Bhagavatam doesn't say everything. Prabhupada points this out, the Acharyas point this out. It's not like the Bhagavatam says everything that happens. If it said everything, you wouldn't have time to finish the Bhagavatam.
But it doesn't say in the translation, that is what Prabhupada says in the purport about the Sauvari Muni doesn't say anything about
the. Yeah, because it's not mentioned. Look, once again, the Bhagavatam can't say everything. But the Bhagavatam doesn't have to say everything, because it's mentioned in other Puranas and like that. So as is being said here, Prabhupada points out that in order to go back to the spiritual world, you have to become detached from your body, but then you have to become attached to your subtle body. So if you become detached from the subtle body, it means the desires that are within the subtle body. So you can't go back to the spiritual world if you're still attached to all the desires that are within your mind. So until you transcend your material desires, you can't go back to the spiritual world. So the gross body has to be, you must become detached from it, and then also the subtle body, and then you can go back to Krishna. Otherwise it's not possible. Any points? Okay, one more verse. O Maharaj Parikshit, by observing their husband progressing in spiritual existence, Sobhari Muni's wives were also able to enter the spiritual world by his spiritual power. Just as the flames of a fire cease when the fire is extinguished. So if we become attached to an advanced devotee, we'll go to the same place as the advanced devotee, even if we're not qualified. So Prabhupada says in the purport that the wives, they were not pure devotees, but Sobhari was. So he went back to the spiritual world. So because they were attached to him, they also went back. So even if we do not become pure devotees, if we're attached to a pure devotee, you can go back to the spiritual world. The Bhagavatam says that.
Yes, he had to do so many things for us to elevate so many people. So that's why he went into Maya.
So ultimately, who is it that is taking all of us back to Godhead? It is Prabhupada. Yeah. Because we're attached to him, Prabhupada said that we will all go back to Godhead. He said that. He said you have to follow the regulative principles and you have to chant 16 rounds, minimum. He said that. He said if you do that, you will go back to Godhead. So basically it's not really us that's taking us back to Godhead. It's basically just because we're attached to Prabhupada then.
Good.
Okay. So we'll see you tomorrow night. Srila Prabhupada ki.